I want to extend a special welcome tonight to my old friend, Devin Wallace, who's here visiting us on Zoom. Devin and I go back a very long way and really to the beginning of my Zen practice. There's a long story there, but I won't tell that whole story, but I will say that Devin and I believe it was his first, and I know it was my first session. We sat session together, and I'm guessing it was like 1977 or 78 in Green Gulch Farm. This is just a few years actually after Green Gulch Farm became a Zen center. So we go a long way back, and I'm happy to have him joining us tonight. As it happens, I was in the Green Gulch Farm Zendo today. And you say, how did that happen? Well, I was in that Zendo like I'm in this meeting with you. I was in the Zendo on Zoom. Because I've been participating this month since the 11th in the January intensive, which has been going on. That's also been something that's been going on for a long time, I think since 1995 or six. And during a 3-week period every January. And I've had the good fortune to go to that intensive 6 times in the flesh, in the body. And this time I've been able to join it on Zoom. So I was there in the Zendo and sitting Zazen and chanting a part of the Lotus Sutra, which is the theme of this January intensive. So everything comes full circle. So at some point, this intensive is being led by Reb Anderson, who has, I believe, led every intensive since 1996 at Green Gulch Farm. And we've been listening to his lectures each day. And, I've been sitting my usual morning periods and then joining the class at 9 a.m., which goes till a couple hours, and then we sit a period and have service, and the event is over by noon. So it's been kind of full, kind of makes it, it's almost a little too much, but nevertheless, I've mostly persevered. And so I was sitting my morning periods one day during this intensive on my own, and some words came to me, and the words were, we now join this broadcast already in progress. That's a phrase from television. They would have an announcement. They would say, now we interrupt this broadcast to bring you an important message. And then they'd bring you the important message, and then they would say, and now we join this broadcast, our broadcast already in progress. And I thought, that's sometimes a condition. That's sometimes how a condition that arises in Zazen. And it's, I think, it's a, it's kind of a happy condition that arises in Zazen, when we all of a sudden have the feeling that we're not the broadcaster. You know, we're not the broadcaster. We're joining the broadcast. And this broadcast could be, various names could be applied to this broadcast. One name is, we could just say life. We join in Zazen, we join the broadcast of life. We join the broadcast of our life. And we join the broadcast of, sometimes we feel a greater life, a larger life. Sometimes we feel like we're not just sitting on our own, but we're sitting in the midst of a larger broadcast. And this broadcast could also be called awareness, or it could be called consciousness. That's not awareness, that's not personal. Perhaps consciousness that is not personal. And finally, this broadcast could be called, it could be called Buddha's wisdom. And we're joining the broadcast of Buddha's wisdom in our Zazen. And when we have that condition arise in Zazen, it's kind of sweet. It is a condition of Zazen. We've been reading something from Shohaku Okamura, and he characterizes these various impressions that that arise in our Zazen as the scenery of our sitting practice. So various things, you know, arise in the scenery of our Zazen practice. And one of those can be that we're not doing this practice on our own. That we're being supported and held up, and we're joining in a greater effort, a greater project of some sort. And again, this is kind of when we have that condition arise in Zazen, it's kind of a happy condition. That condition usually disappears when we try to get a hold of it, when we try to grasp it, when we try to say, this is it. Now I've entered the way. Usually then that feeling tends to kind of evaporate and some other broadcast takes its place. So there's this other broadcast that I've been listening to since January 11th, for I guess we just finished our 11th day of talking about the Lotus Sutra. And for most of this time, the focus of our discussion and Reb's talks has been on Chapter 2 of the Lotus Sutra. And this chapter is called Skill and Means, or Upaya in the Sanskrit. Skill and Means. It starts out by telling us that it is very difficult to understand the Buddha's wisdom, that it's very difficult to understand the Buddha Dharma. And it tells us that there's two kinds of people who really have a lot of difficulty understanding the teaching that's about to be offered. And those people are called Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas. So I don't want to, give you a class on the Lotus Sutra, but those two kinds of people have a difficult time understanding the Buddha's wisdom. And the reason that they have a difficult time, even though they're very advanced practitioners, and they have really amazing meditation, powers of meditation, and study of Dharma, they can't quite go to the depths. And the reason given that they can't quite go to the depths is because they think that Buddha Dharma is about them. They think it's a project for personal liberation. They think it's something that they can do on their own. And Shravakas think they can do it because they have great powers of hearing. They can really hear well. They have wonderful powers of auditory perception. And Pratyeka Buddhas, I'm less sure what they think they can do, but what I'm sure they think the way that's defined is that they have a strong belief that they can become enlightened on their own without any help. They're kind of private Buddhas that can do it by themselves. So the proposal of the Lotus Sutra, and this is a very famous proposal because it gets taken up by Dogen. The proposal of the Lotus Sutra is that only a Buddha and a Buddha can go to the depths of the Dharma. Only a Buddha and a Buddha. The idea, the basic idea is that, we need a teacher, or we need some relationship. We need some kind of relationship with someone in the Dharma in order to go to the depths of the Dharma. And Dogen was very taken by this this idea of only a Buddha and a Buddha. And I believe my teacher, Reb Anderson, is very taken by this idea of a Buddha and a Buddha, only a Buddha and a Buddha. There's a critic who comes along later of this phrase, and he says, his name is Menzon, and he says, only a deluded person and a deluded person. I kind of like that. I feel more at home there. But in both cases, there's a relationship. There's some relationship. There's some meeting. There's some face-to-face transmission, as Reb is so fond of saying. Some face-to-face meeting. So, like I say, Dogen was taken with this, and he wrote an essay on it, and it's part of the Treasury of the True Dharma Eye, the Shobo Genzo, and the fascicle called Only a Buddha and a Buddha. And in that, he talks about, well, he asks, well, what is this he wants to give us some stories about Buddha's wisdom. And he has a story that he recounts in there. And it's a pretty straightforward story. So I'd like to read that story to you that is from Dogen's essay. He starts by recounting a story. Long ago, a monk asked an old master, when hundreds, thousands of myriad objects come all at once, what should be done? When hundreds, thousands of myriad objects come all at once, what should be done? The master replied, but don't try to control them. And then Dogen comments on this story. He says, what he means, he's referring to the teacher who just said, don't try to control all these myriad objects that are coming, all these myriad thoughts, all these myriad impressions, all these myriad feelings that are coming to us all the time. Dogen says, what he means is that whatever way objects come, do not try to change them. Whatever comes is the Buddha Dharma, not objects at all. This is a very important point. Whatever comes is the Buddha Dharma, not objects at all. Do not understand the master's reply as merely a brilliant admonition, but realize that it is the truth. Even if you try to control what comes, it cannot be controlled. So this is kind of really excellent Zazen instruction. And I can refer back to my previous analogy or metaphor of this broadcast. There is a broadcast that's always coming, and we're not really in charge of this broadcast. And you know, we kind of like to be in charge of the broadcast, because sometimes the broadcast of feelings and thoughts is unpleasant. And at those times, we kind of wish, well, I wish I could be in charge of this broadcast. But that's a challenge, you know. The broadcast is just coming a lot of times. And Dogen says, you know, don't try to change it. Don't try to grasp it. Just see that the broadcast is coming without trying to change it. And just notice what the broadcast is. You know, this is our basic Zazen instruction. Just notice moment after moment the broadcast that is coming. There's a question for me, is there a mind of not grasping? Is there a mind of non-grasping? Sometimes I think I can raise such a mind. I hope I'm not fooling myself, you know. But if there is a mind of non-grasping, it's just letting the broadcast come and not identifying with it, you know. It's coming, And there are causes and conditions for it to come. And some of those causes and conditions you could say are, you know, true, they're factual. You know, lately my knees have been hurting a lot. And that's a, you know, that's kind of a broadcast that's coming that I'm having a hard time letting go of. But it, you know, it is what's happening. It's what's appearing. And can I meet that with a mind of not grasping it? It's hard. It's hard to go to the depths of the Buddha's wisdom relative to unpleasant experience. This is particularly challenging. Unpleasant experience is a hard place to meet. A hard thing to meet, or a hard experience to meet. It's easy to grasp pleasant experience, and it's easy to push away unpleasant experience. This comes quite naturally to us. But to meet all experience with a mind of non-grasping, this takes some practice. This is the raison d'être of our practice. My French accent has gone out the window studying Spanish. So we spent, like, of this class on the Lotus Sutra, we spent three of the days of 11 days we spent on chapter 2. So this is considered a very important chapter, apparently. It is a very important chapter. And the chapter has a punchline or a kernel we paid a lot of attention to. So I'd like to bring this, even though I said I wasn't going to, like, really give you try to redo the class here. I don't want to do that, but I want to, this kernel, I'd like to read you this kernel. So the sutra says, this is the Buddha talking about what Buddhas do in the world. What do I mean by saying it is for this one great cause alone that Buddhas appear in the world? So then there's this one great cause, but then he lists four things. Four things. One great cause with four sub-points. It says, the Buddhas appear in the world because they want living beings to open to the way of the Buddha's insight and thus become pure. They want living beings to open. That's the first point. They appear in the world because they want to demonstrate the Buddha's insight to living beings. They want to show an example. They want to show an example to living beings of the Buddha's wisdom. They want to teach by example. Demonstrate. So that's two. Open, demonstrate. They appear in the world because they want living beings to awaken to the Buddha's wisdom, to the Buddha's insight. They appear in the world because they want living beings to enter into the way of the Buddha's insight. This alone is the one great cause for which Buddhas appear in the world. So in this chapter 2, Buddha is telling us that they want us to have the same liberation as they have. They want us to open to that. They want to demonstrate it. They want to awaken us in it. And they want us to enter it, enter in to the Buddha's wisdom. open, demonstrate, awaken, enter. This is what the Buddhas, they have a liberation, and they want to give it away. That's really what they want to do. They want to give it away. They want to give it to all of us. And so that's really what the Buddhas are up to. And then, you know, so the final point of the chapter 2 of Lotus Sutra is to set us up and tell us that it's kind of setting us up, because it's saying the way I teach as a Buddha is I teach by stories. I teach by parables. I teach that, and those stories and those parables, they're coming in this sutra. They're going to come. And that's the skillful means. The skillful means is listen to these stories that are coming in the Lotus Sutra, and that's where you will see me opening and demonstrating and awakening and entering Buddha's wisdom. And then there's something very interesting. So then, you know, we get to read some of the stories, and these stories are fairly famous, and a lot of people know these stories, these parables that are in the Lotus Sutra about the prodigal son, the son that wanders away from his father and wanders in poverty for many years. I won't recount that whole story, but many people have heard that story. And then he returns to his father, and I won't really go into it. But and then there's another story where somebody in the story who is having a hard time gets a jewel sewn into his coat and walks around with it for years without knowing that it's sewn into his coat, and that he goes around for a long, long time thinking he's very, very poor, and only to find out later that he's always been rich. He's always been wealthy. So there's other parables, but these are the two that spoke to me the most. And I won't say that. But they speak of one thing that I wanted to bring out, which is that that the sutra is showing us the ways in which we have a low opinion of ourselves, that we have low self-esteem, that we disciples see ourselves as unworthy and incapable of, and outside, far outside of an awakened life, an awakened way. So these stories have that very much in common. And they seek to demonstrate that the path has something to do with growing in confidence in our original inheritance, in our true inheritance, in our innate capacity that was never not there, but was not recognized by us, not honored by us, not developed by us, not practiced and believed by us, neglected, overlooked, but always there, always, that Buddha's wisdom is always present. And it's something about growing in confidence in that, growing in confidence in our innate awakening. Our original complete, pure, wise self. You know, we have this within us, this jewel sewn into our robe, into our coat. But you know, it's just like the story, you know, the Buddha's awakening, where he says, when he awakens, he says, "Now I see that all of you have the virtues and enlightenment of the awakened ones. Now I see that all beings have the virtues and enlightenment of the awakened ones. But because of their delusions and attachments, they do not realize it. Because of their delusions and attachments." So there's something covering, you know, our understanding and our confidence in our original awakening. But beneath that, or through that, or, well, we're just reading commentary, and you know, the Mountains and Waters Sutra comes to mind, where Shohaku Okamura says, it's like being covered. It's like being the sky covered with clouds, but always knowing that above the clouds, the sun is shining. There's a bright blue sky. Having confidence in that. So I think that's enough talk for me. And if you would like to raise a hand or have a question or comment, please, I'll call on you if I see such a hand raised. I see a hand from Peter.
Yes, thank you, Jim. I am interested to know what might be the impact of, one, in this instance, you speak of yourself being able to release the experience of having your knees be sore.
What the impact of releasing that is?
Yeah, what, why would, What's the goal there?
Well, to not have my spirit covered up. You know, to not let set of sensations bury, you know, my good heart, if you will. Susan Farrar.
Thanks for the talk, Jim. That's really timely for me. I love, love, love the concept of a Buddha and a Buddha. There's been a lot of teachings recently on the Lotus Sutra, I've noticed, from podcasts, mm-hmm. Upaya and Everyday Zen. It's really interesting. There's a lot going on with the Lotus Sutra right now. And this concept of a Buddha and a Buddha is just like so, for me, necessary, because everything is so remote right now. And so it's really hard to have the connection of a Buddha and a Buddha. It's really difficult. So that's very timely. And thank you for that. And the other thing I thought of while you were recounting chapter 2 is when the Buddha is saying the reasons for the Buddha to manifest, because the Buddha needs us, right? A Buddha and a Buddha, the Buddha needs us.
Yeah. The teacher needs the student.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, thank you for the talk. It was very helpful for me.
Will?
Thank you, Jim, for your talk, as usual, as you always do such a wonderful job of explaining things. And you were talking about the Shravakas, and I think you pronounce it the Pratyayakyas, and it just, who can really claim to reach the depth of the Dharma, and it just seems like an unreachable state. It can just feel kind of overwhelming to think that, you know, you have to take it to depths. And
yeah, I think that's the There is a tendency to think that that makes it somehow unattainable. That makes Buddha's wisdom unattainable. Like, how could we ever, you know, reach that level? I don't think that is what we should take away, though. I think what we should take away is that, however this Dharma gets transmitted, it will happen in relationship. It will happen one to one, or maybe one to three, or two to four, or it will happen together with our fellow practitioners. It will happen together with our teachers, what makes it hard to accomplish is, or hard to realize, accomplish is a bad word, but hard to realize is trying to do it all on our own, trying to do it by ourselves, trying to practicing it, or practicing as if we are isolated. And of course, this is a big issue for us right now, because we are so isolated in ways that we haven't been for ever in our lives. And we've been isolated for a long time now. And it isn't very conducive to our way. And, you know, even the great Reb Anderson told us the other day, he said, I just want you to know this is really hard for me. Really hard for me. And I think he speaks for all of us when he says that, you know, it's really hard for us to be so separated all the time and not, you know, have the kind of dialogues that we would normally have that might be face to face and have, you know, a lasting impact on us. So I really do like the critic monk who said, you know, only a deluded person and a deluded person. So, you know, keep that in mind too, that something can happen there. Something vital could happen there. Just being with a friend or being with another person, being with your students, being with your family. I think there are more opportunities. Larry.
Thanks, Jim. I love the talk. I think you started with a question and you ended up, I thought you were answering your own question. As I recall, you posed the question at the outset, can we actually rest in non-dual awareness? I may be using words different than yours, but or can we I don't know. That's how I took it. And then I think you ended up by concluding that as we gain faith and confidence, we can see our original face. So I mean, I just like the way that you framed the discussion in that sense. So, you know, we're all trying to enter the mind of Buddha, as Reb's latest book is chaptered. I can only speak for myself and my own practice. I don't know how it works for other people, but one of the first words that I, you know, held on to because I didn't understand anything else was Suzuki Roshi's words in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. He says, sit in sincerity and faith. And I think when you talk about gaining the confidence, this sit in sincerity and faith speaks to that a little bit. We don't know that there's blue sky. We may only see the clouds, but, you know, I sit in sincerity and faith. And something that a teacher said to me recently really helped my understanding of that, which is, you know, relax. It may take several lifetimes. And to come to that realization that I don't know what's going on. How am I going to figure this out? you've got a couple of lifetimes to figure it out. So just do what you do right now. And if you do, you know, so that I found that just, I just loved hearing that. And it gave me a whole new perspective on my practice. So anyway, that's my thoughts. Thank you for your talk.
There's a line in, I'm not sure I'm exactly remembering it right, but in the Jukai ceremony of taking precepts, there's a line that says, we take these precepts in faith that we are Buddha. This is, you know, big faith, right? This is big, big faith. But to practice in the alternative, as the alternative would be, I'm practicing, but I don't have faith and I'm in Buddha, or I in faith that I am Buddha. That's, you know, that's the Lotus Sutra parables are actually, you know, saying that's too cramped. That's too small. You know, encouraging us, you know, not to practice that way. Give yourself the benefit of the doubt. You can't get puffed up about it, of course. You know, you can't go around saying, I am Buddha. Nobody's encouraging that here. But don't rule it out, you know. Don't exclude that. I would just say don't exclude it. And, you know, just sit with, maybe I'm a deluded person. Maybe I'm a Buddha. I don't know. Sit with that don't know mind, you know. Maybe so. Dora Lee.
Thank you. Maybe just to connect again with what you were saying about needing to be in interaction, needing to be in communion with each other. And I have this little piece of paper near my cushion that says, in order to be intimate with ourselves, we need help. And lately I've been kind of intensifying my Zazen sit, but you helped me see that I've had two interactions with sort of Dharma friends, and I'm amazed at what that interaction opened up, helped me see about my practice that I would never have seen if I hadn't been in that kind of Dharma exchange. And it feels more precious to me now because, you know, it's more rare, you know, to be able to interact in this way. And so, you know, maybe just to think of ourselves as Dharma friends, we can reach out. But anyway, you helped me see again how much those conversations matter. So thank you.
You're welcome. I can't see everybody on my screen, but I'm going back and forth now looking to see if there's more questions.
I think Susan's hand is up.
It was, I don't know, maybe she never took it down, but if she has another question, I'm happy to hear it. I think she took it down. Well, everyone, it's very good to be with you once again on Zoom, I guess. Zoom's all we got. Some people are saying, I know some people that are getting their shot, and some people are saying maybe we will start to see some diminishment. I heard something today that they lifted the stay-at-home order for all of California. Maybe we see a little bit of glimmer of light, just a tiny glimmer. Let us hope that that is true. We certainly have seen some glimmer of light in our body politic. So there is... Let's continue to have faith and understanding, faith and understanding. Thank you so much.